RAMW Awards Gala, and Kathy Hollinger's here. She's the executive director of the Restaurant Association of Metro Washington, and she's going to take us behind the scenes of the Rammies. Ooh, I'll have to whisper this one.
Maybe we'll find out who the winners are.
We'll find out
early.
How the winners are nominated and chosen, and she's not getting out of here until we know who won.
Right. Okay. And in studio today, we have Tony Luca. He's the managing partner of 1905, that darling little restaurant over on 9th Street, right?
Well, I would never describe anything as a darling little restaurant.
Oh, it is. It's like
so
a little
girly.
Gem. I love it.
Okay.
Anyway, it's so girly. And his group is about to open up a new restaurant soon, El Camino. We're going to get the 411 on that.
And a really cool guy, celebrity chef Willo Bennett is here. He's the chef owner of the award-winning Picayo restaurant in San Juan, Puerto Rico. And he's in town. He's cooking up a Father's Day brunch today at Mio. As soon as we get him off the air, he's going to shoot out of here. So you should go over to Mio on Vermont Avenue today. If you can, you can still get in. A couple of seats left. And you're going to hear all about him and why you should head over there later today.
And our party makers in studio today are STK. It's the new hot restaurant below DuPont Circle. They are
a restaurant and nightclub for...
It's a club. They don't like to be called a club.
That it doesn't become. Yes, it.
It's dancey.
Yeah.
Let's call it what it is. It's a great. It's a great restaurant and pickup place.
Okay. Well, we've got Rob Sanders and Carrie Sipple in here. They are going to mix up some cocktails and tell us all about the concept. So, guys, let's just kick it off with you.
Yeah.
Since you don't want to be known as a club, tell us how STK does want to be known.
No, ultimately, we just blend two concepts. You know, your modern-day steakhouse with a chic lounge atmosphere, TJ spinning five nights a week. So when you bring atmosphere, good service, good food, you have STK.
Okay. And tell us more about the menu at STK and what they're doing there.
Yeah, well, we have quite a selection of steaks. Obviously, we are a steakhouse. We have
ergo STK.
Ergo, there you go, minus the vowels. Steak. But we offer small, medium, and large cuts of steak. That way, we cater to both men and women. And it just, as I said, you know, it's kind of that party atmosphere with great food. So right here, you guys, we are pouring out our strawberry cobbler.
Okay.
It is our one of our nation's best sellers, as well as one here in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
So it is just Belvedere with muddled fresh strawberries, a little bit of citrus, and it's finished off with a graham cracker crust.
How many STKs are there?
There are 8. So we have two in New York, L.A., Atlanta, Miami, Las Vegas, London, and now our newest and the best.
So nothing in Kensington, Maryland.
No, not yet.
I don't think there's
still time.
It might have opened and I didn't know.
All
right, so while we're sipping this, why don't we talk to Cahal and David about this book. We read up, and I did read, by the way,
a lot
about your road to celebrated chefdom. It was sort of circuitous and a little torturous, too. I mean, you didn't wake up one morning as a 5-year-old and say, I'm going to be a chef. You had...
No intelligent people wake up when they're 5 years old and say, I'm going to be a chef.
So, I mean, talk about how you got from there to here.
Oh, God, what a long story.
It's only an hour show.
Right.
Well, I mean, I went to an all-Irish-speaking high school, which is really unusual, very small school. And after high school, I went to study computer programming.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see there's a natural flow.
Yeah, I can see. Okay, but thanks for coming in.
Okay, thanks, Paul.
Have a nice day. Well, so computer programming in those days was Pascal and COBOL and BASIC, and it was just so ridiculously boring. And so when I woke up in class one day, I knew that I really needed to do something else.
But your father was in a huge...
Yeah, my father is a cook,
right.
A great natural cook, and he's also an avid gardener.
Mm-hmm.
So he grew an awful lot of the food that we ate. So food was always a very, very, very important part of our upbringing. And like, you weren't allowed not be at the dinner table for dinner unless you were participating in a sporting event of some kind.
Was he growing it? I mean, kind of the typical stuff, tomatoes, lettuce, and all that? Or was there anything that was sort of unusual for an Irish table?
Pretty much everything was unusual for an Irish table because my mother had never tasted garlic until she met him. So the diet in Ireland was very plain and very simple. And you said boiled mutton. I mean, everybody was eating boiled mutton in those days because it was the inexpensive thing to eat.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, he grew leeks and Brussels sprouts and gooseberries and rhubarb and, you know, the list was endless of peas and potatoes.
How big was your yard?
Tiny. tiny, you know, but we just packed it in with stuff. We robbed a truckload of cobblestones and built this beautiful Y-shaped cobblestone path into the backyard that was only probably 800 square feet maybe in total. But, you know, I mean, we had pears and apples and raspberries and everything that we could jam into that space, we did.
Well, even if you fast forward today to Restaurant Eve, I mean, your garden space is not tremendous, but you have a lot going on there, don't you?
Yeah, and it's funny that I have a garden there because, you know, we hated the garden. I mean, Dad woke us up at 6 o'clock every Saturday morning to shovel horse manure into the back garden, you know, and we were in a suburban neighborhood and our friends were so appalled by the smell, and like we were the embarrassed kids that had to deal
with
this.
I like the story about how they would dump the horse manure in front of the house and you had to move it around.
Right. Like they just dumped the truckload.
We
in the
have
front
three
yard.
Dogs. It's not that
it's
dissimilar.
It's really not that similar.
All right. So aside from boiled mutton, talk about traditional Irish cuisine and how you have morphed it at Restaurant Eve and in this book to something totally different.
Well, I mean, we could get really political and talk about how much the British destroy the Irish for hundreds of years, but we can skip over that part.
I mean, we could.
Let's skim over that part.
Let's forget that.
We were at the museum in Dublin where we saw every animal that they killed off, stuffed, the last one stuffed.
So we don't really, you don't typically associate cuisine with Ireland because of the history, but Ireland is a moderate temperate climate. There's green grass 365 days a year.
Mm-hmm.
They herd cattle outdoors, it's sheep outdoors year round. So you have a tremendous dairy industry. It's also a tiny, tiny little island that's rich with seafood. There's tremendous lobster. There's a huge oyster festival in Galway every year.
Mm-hmm.
So all the resources are there for cuisine, but it just never really had an opportunity to evolve. So mostly what you see in traditional Irish cooking is cheap cuts of meat that were boiled.
Right.
You know, because poor sanitation practices and the limited availability of ingredients to the regular people, and you end up with a cuisine that's, you know, boiled neck of lamb, which traditional Irish stew was made with the neck meat. And, you know, what David and I laughed about over and over and over again while we were writing this book was that the traditional Irish cooking technique of boil the bejesus out of it.
Well, so there's nothing left.
What a recipe.
But,
bring
but
water
now,
to boil.
So much is going on in Ireland now.
Yeah.
And, you know, the economic boom there has sort of changed everything. And that includes your cooking. So you hooked up with David Hagedorn. How did the two of you get together to... David, how did you guys get together to write this book?
Well, we've known each other for 25 years or more.
Mm-hmm.
When I was coming up as a chef, Mary Richter was another chef in town who's a good friend, Greg mm-hmm. Hill. And Carl was working for Mary Richter. That's how he met his wife.
Oh, Michelle.
Yeah. So we've just known each other forever, and we've been friends for
so,
a
right,
long
but why
time.
A book? I mean, why now? Why a book on Irish? I mean, and explaining how Irish cuisine has changed and how you're interpreting it.
Well, you know, I think to a large extent, it becomes almost inevitable that you're going to write a cookbook when you're a chef. I mean, that's kind of the thing that everybody is doing, and we talked about it. And obviously, I wanted to do a Restaurant Eve cookbook, but no one is going to buy a book about Restaurant Eve's food because it's not repeatable. You know, restaurant food is complicated, and we did include a couple of recipes from Restaurant Eve in the book, but there are lists and lists and lists of ingredients, and it takes days and days and days, and you need a staff to prepare it. So what made more sense to me was to write a story about how I got to Restaurant Eve.
Mm-hmm.
And the book is very biographical. It's very personal.
To the great
you know,
stories.
When we first got the proof in the mail and I started reading it, it almost brought a tear to my eye because they're very genuine stories about what it was like being a lad in Ireland, being an illegal immigrant in America, and ending up owning a bunch of restaurants, and you know how that path led to where I am today. So,
well, the tear was because he remembered me badgering him over and over again for 2 years.
I thought
years.
He was crying because he was glad to see me again. So. All those recipes, are they from the past? Are they new recipes? How did you test them out? What did you guys do?
How did you guys work on it together?
So the recipes are mostly things that I ate growing up, my favorite dishes from growing up. And there's a little influence from the continent. My father was a travel agent, so we traveled a lot more than most Irish families would have. And when I was seven, I started traveling to France on an exchange program. So, you know, I was probably exposed to a lot more food than everybody in my high school or, you know, would have been. So, that was the first step. And then, you know, David and I just kind of went down through a list of to try and organize it and to make some sense out of the whole chaos that a person's life is. And,
David, how did you figure out, as you guys were discussing the book and putting the recipes together, how did you come up with the different categories and how you wanted it to be put together?
Well, it really laid out, rather than doing it in a normal format that would be appetizers, salads, eggs, entrees, bread, whatever, it just fell into place that it would be what things his mother cooked, things they ate while watching sports programs, which were more kind of snack oriented things. And then fish is for Fridays. Obviously, that's something very important in Ireland. And the vegetable chapter, of course, had to have a separate chapter on potatoes. So I mean, it really kind of fell into place. And the bread named after the baker that they went to all the time. So it was really...
Your mom was a baker too, wasn't she?
My mom has a great touch with pastry, which is you know, something that even after I practice it over and over and over again, and I can't get it.
Did
exactly
any of that work its way into here?
Yeah, her recipe for apple pie is in there, which you know, everyone says their mother makes the best apple pie. My mother really does make the best apple
My
pie.
My wife makes the best.
No, I don't.
Your apple pie, your interpretation of your mother's apple pie is pretty good, Colin.
It's close. Close.
What is it? What is it about your mother's apple pie?
It's a very simple, quick puff pastry recipe that she uses, and it's just a deft touch. And the complicated part of
a
it
deft
is
touch.
The complicated part of it is knowing how much water to add, because the water changes depending on the time of year, how humid it is. You know,
and no cinnamon.
No cinnamon.
And disgusting. I just want to say, just because he uses an urbane and literate phrasing, there's no reason for you to repeat it.
I can't help.
That was a good way of putting
okay.
it. Ignore
we
my
have
wife,
to take
please.
A break. Okay, this is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a sec.
Hi, I'm Avina. I'm 7 years old and I'm blind. You can help me live the life I want.
Help Ravina and other blind people by making a tax-deductible donation of your used car, truck, or almost anything with wheels to the National Federation of the Blind. Just call 855-659-9314 or visit carshelpingtheblind.org. That's carshelpingtheblind.org. And if you know a blind person who needs help, email nfb@nfb.org.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
June is Men's Health Month. For men over age 60, abdominal aortic aneurysm, also called AAA, is the third leading cause of sudden death. Major risk factors for AAA in men include family history, smoking, and high blood pressure. It is recommended that men between the ages of 65 and 75 who have ever smoked get a one-time ultrasound screening. Men with a family history of AAA should be screened by age 60. With early detection, the condition is treatable. For more information, visit radiologyinfo.org. That's radiologyinfo.org.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis talking to Cathal Armstrong and the urbane erudite David Hagedorn about the book they collaborated on, a great cookbook called My Irish Table, which has been out 2-3 months, am I right?
March.
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 Okay. But you're still going to be doing some book signings and stuff like that. You've got one coming up in Bethesda, yes?
Yeah, there's one at the Farmers Market in Bethesda, and I know I'm doing one at the Library of Congress on the 30th of August.
Well, look, it's not bad. Look at you. Wow. The Library of Congress. And is all that information on your website?
It's on the website, myirishtable.com.
All right. Okay, great. And David, I just wanted to ask, since we have a little bit of time, as you guys were working together, even though you've been friends for so long, were there some of the recipes or some of the stories new to you? And are there some that you go back to that you really loved or still make?
There was a lot that was new to me. I learned a lot, as I do writing every book, but it really didn't occur to me that the Irish didn't even have a cuisine until the 20th century, because all of the food that they grew went to the British, except for one crop that they were allowed to grow, which was potatoes, which have famously failed in the 19th century and killed millions of people, which was a kind of a design flaw for the British, I think. But
that's a way of describing it.
You know, the Irish chefs, people who are interested in cooking, went to the continent and were working in French restaurants, and then came back when the economy started booming in the 80s. And mm-hmm. then you had this kind of birth of Irish cuisine. I didn't really know any of that. And Cathal's way of cooking was to take some of these dishes that were known to be, have a reputation for being bland or not having a lot of flavor, and adding all of his own influences as of classically trained French chef, as an American chef, all of those things, to inject flavor into a lot of traditional dishes. And one dish in particular was a Dublin caudle, which is, when his mother made it, he said he didn't really care for it, with milk and sausage and leftover potatoes and whatever, and she boiled the bejesus out of it, which translates into simmer gently for 1 hour. he made it more like a blanquette, a French blanquette with cream and thyme and garlic, and, really a fabulous dish. And mm-hmm. we were doing the recipes at my house because we wanted everything to be done in a home kitchen. And Michael would just go crazy. My husband would go crazy when he would come home and see this Dublin caudle that, we tested these recipes over and over and over again. So he never tired of the Dublin caudle.
As opposed to the usual stuff you cook, I understand. Poor Michael. Long-suffering Michael. All right, the book is called My Irish Table, Recipes from the Homeland and Restaurant Eve. Cathal Armstrong continues to wow, and David Hagedorn continues to wow. Guys, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so
Pleasure.
Much.
Thanks,
Thank you.
All right, so let's go back to Rob and Carrie and talk about STK. Let's talk about...
How come we don't have the DJ in here? That's what we need this morning. We need some music.
I'll turn my phone on.
Because I'm really dying to break dance right now. Talk about Mark Hennessy and what he's doing in the kitchen, because he's doing a lot of local sourcing. I know that.
Yeah, no, Chef Mark Hennessy is new to the One Group, his first SDK. Mm-hmm. He is a very smart, talented guy who obviously is all about the food. He has made it a point to make 30% of our menu locally sourced, with such items including our local striped bass, grilled octopus, and glazed sea scallops. So even though we are a steakhouse, we like to have a little bit of everything for everybody.
Well, but you guys also have this reputation. Well, you started initially when you came to D.C. is this reputation of being the female steakhouse. But then you tried to shed that reputation. So can we get into that a little bit?
Sure. I mean,
female steakhouse?
Yeah, it's supposed to be
it's female friendly.
Female friendly.
So basically saying, when you walk in and you sit down and all you see is a, 32-ounce bone-in rib, it's not necessarily the most appealing.
Totally disagree with you.
Well,
on
I'm not
that.
Saying, but
I feel
we
like
have,
the
I'm
gauntlet is
Can
I tell you what?
Have you ever seen
on.
Nikki Each eats like Fred Flintstone did?
I
a brontosaurus like a burger and a.
No, we just want to, cater towards everybody as they're coming in, mm-hmm. having the small, medium, and large cuts of meats, as I said earlier. And people can just come in and enjoy, Mark's food. He is a super talented guy. So.
And Carrie, what you do here?
Here we have the cucumber stiletto, also one of our very popular drinks throughout all the STK locations. It's kettle citron with muddled cucumber and mint and a little bit of Saint Germain.
All right.
All right. Now let's talk Rammies. Kathy Hollinger's with us. She's the executive director of the Restaurant Association of Metropolitan Washington. And I guess that makes you the grand poobah of the Rammies and everything that goes on behind the scenes and in front of the scenes. Getting any sleep?
No.
Okay. Nice.
So
thanks for coming in, though.
Great. You have a week off.
So you've changed the awards categories. A lot of things have changed around this year. You want to talk a little about
that? Sure. So a year and a half ago, I came in. Mm-hmm. And we spent a lot of time, I spent a lot of time trying to listen and survey and really understand, I mean, more globally, what needs to change at REMW outside mm-hmm. of the outside of the Rammies. But with the Rammies in particular, because people were very passionate about the Rammies, we had categories that needed to be revisited, the awards program itself.
In you terms mean like of the event?
The event, mm-hmm. the event. So all the logistics, venue, all of that, which is very, which is a big deal as you're growing.
Sure.
And the judging process. And although the changes were not very extreme, they were enough that I thought it was necessary to move it forward because the industry is evolving. Mm-hmm. And I felt that it was just as important that our events evolve with the growth that's happening in the industry.
Well, let's start from the top. Let's talk about the judging, because that seems to be the most controversial. You know, for years, it was a private panel of judges. They all met together and nominated, discussed, made the whole thing work. And now you've changed all of that. So let's talk about how the judging is done now.
So it's not that much different. Mm-hmm. The only difference, it's still a private panel of judges.
Okay.
Anonymous to the public. Mm-hmm. The only difference is that this year they're also anonymous to one another.
Okay.
So the only step that has been taken out is that they don't get together and discuss.
Mm-hmm.
And there's good and bad with that.
Right.
I mean, the good is that it streamlines the process.
Mm-hmm.
It forces a speedier process. And it was a time suck for a lot of the judges. So
right.
I wanted to be very sensitive to all that goes into this process, starting in January leading up to the Rammies.
So I should not reveal here on the air that I'm a judge.
You're not a judge.
I should not say that.
And I should also
publicly?
Say, for the
absolutely
record,
not.
Do you know how many times I've been accused of being a judge? I've
I'm
never
not,
been a judge.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
I've accused her.
No, people have, like, after the awards, people are like, I can't believe you didn't vote for me. I'm like, I have no vote to give.
But, you know, so that's interesting because that is the feedback that we were getting. What I wanted to do is just nip. Whether it was true, false, I wanted mm-hmm. to nip it in the bud,
mm-hmm.
start afresh,
right?
Increase the number of judges on the panel
mm-hmm.
slightly, but to bring a fuller perspective, make sure that we have judges that represent the entire region, because we represent the entire region.
Mm-hmm.
Will we change it next year and in years to come? We may. It'll always be an anonymous panel of judges to the public.
Okay.
Whether it's to one another, you know,
well,
we have to see
to
and
that
assess.
Point, though, and we have a lot of questions for you, but there was always the talk that the nominees were, it was very D.C.-centric, and that even if you had a great restaurant out in Annandale, you didn't have a shot because...
Well, you have to be a member.
Well, you could be a member. They have, you have gazillions of members.
Oh, yeah, we have a lot of members
right.
in Northern Virginia, and it's growing.
Right. So, how do you, I mean, is there any, was that always just somebody's perception and never the case, or was that the case?
I think that was perception. I don't think it was the case. The mm-hmm. reality is that if we were to actually reveal, rather than the top five finalists at the nominations party when we make the announcement,
mm-hmm.
if we were to report out on the top 10 finalists, you would see that range.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is that especially in the last couple of years, the growth is crazy.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. D.C. has seen the most, but Northern Virginia is not far behind.
Mm-hmm.
When
I think
it's down to five,
the number was 723 restaurants last year opened up.
In the last decade, we've had 700. In the last year, about 125. That's a lot. A lot of them on 14th Street.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I think that as we evolve, we want to make sure that we are taking the appropriate temperature and gauge of what's happening in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
As long as we're doing that and we evolve with it, then it's going to reflect
well, let's
the nominees.
Talk about the categories this
yeah.
year, because you eliminated some and you brought in some new ones.
Yeah.
Are people crying over the death of Power Spot?
You know, not crying, but it comes up a lot. I think that, again, consistent with what we're seeing across our region. Power Spot was, you know, that was the category that was the it category, and the it restaurant would, you know, be in that category, be nominated. Power has shifted tremendously. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you have the most powerful wanting to go to a fast quick serve, or they want to go to a smaller restaurant that is that is known more for their cuisine versus all the politicians or elected officials or power players coming into town mm-hmm. where they would necessarily gravitate. So Power Spot was one. We also felt that a service category alone was very important. Mm-hmm. We never had that. We thought that the beverage category was much too vague.
It was.
And we needed to break that out, given mm-hmm. what we were seeing with craft beer. So we have beer, we have cocktail, and we have wine. Mm-hmm. And we split those out.
Look at Rob. He's grinning.
Well, and I'm sure that's applauded because, you know, there were people in the industry who weren't getting the attention they deserved because there was no way to...
That's right.
To acknowledge them.
And these weren't decisions that Kathy Hollinger made. These were decisions that when I surveyed the association and members in the association, and quite honestly, people who weren't members of the association, it was mm-hmm. really to understand what is important and what should be applauded mm-hmm. and what should be recognized. These were categories that came back to us to evaluate.
And let me ask another question, because I do hear this every now and again about membership. You know, people compare it to the James Beards Awards, which you do not have to be a member of in order to be acknowledged. Why does RAMI take that stance?
Because we are R-A-M-W. A membership-based organization, mm-hmm. like a DC Chamber of Commerce or any Chamber of Commerce, where this is our biggest fundraiser mm-hmm. for our association that really supports 90% of what we do outside of the RAMIs, mm-hmm. With advocacy and legislation and regulatory and marketing. I'm always amazed that people would challenge that. Mm-hmm. We're a member-based organization that created an event to support the association, and this is the award celebration to support it.
Okay. We have to take a quick break. But
sure.
When we come back, we'd love to talk about the event, the changes that we're going to see this year, and what people can expect.
Great.
This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
Do you know a woman who exemplifies leadership and is making a difference in our community? Then nominate her today to receive an award at the March of Dimes Heroines of Washington Gala. Finalists will be recognized at a Black Tie Awards presentation on November 18th. All proceeds will benefit the March of Dimes mission to give all babies a healthy start in life. To learn more about the March of Dimes and Heroines of Washington, visit marchofdimes.com/DC.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
Hey, Mom, why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why is an 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and we're talking to Kathy Hollinger about the RAMIs. And I will say that we go every year. We've gone for, what, 100 years?
No.
And the high point of the RAMIs, I think, was when Nikki and I presented. Don't you, Nikki? Don't you think that? So talk about the changes in the format.
I presented one year with Kathy. We presented together.
I was going to say, I think that was probably the best awards when Nikki and I presented.
No, I don't care if you're the executive director. You're wrong.
She wasn't the executive director then, but we did present together a long time ago.
So what's the lineup like this year?
So what we've got going on this year, we're always trying to make sure the awards program is everything it needs to be, but not 2 hours long.
Mm-hmm.
So we've put a lot more production into the awards program, which we're very excited excited about. The biggest thing is that we have a brand new venue.
Right.
And we did do the Rammies 1 year at the convention center, but the format was still the old format.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So this
was
the
sit-down dinner.
That's right.
The award ceremony while you were
heavy
eating.
On the reception, right. But... you know, more standard sit-down dinner.
Mm-hmm.
So this year, we're at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center. Beautiful, beautiful footprint. We are probably at about 2,000 people today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It has plenty of space to accommodate all those folks. But we have a real immersive experience when you walk into the ballroom.
Okay.
So we have, you walk in, red carpet experience, a lot mm-hmm. of press that would be there. Then we have a wonderful reception, and we go into our awards program.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully we keep it at the hour that it's slated to be.
Right.
And then we have our celebration from 8 p.m. until midnight.
Mm-hmm. And what's going on at the celebration?
We have pavilions from our friends at Argentina this year.
Mm-hmm.
So we have new sponsors, Argentina, Peru, Pisco Bars. We have...
No Puerto Rico.
Now maybe Puerto Rico
and
next year.
It's going to be all right.
Maybe that's right. Not
I've
yet.
I've never seen a chef cry before.
We have Australia. We have Chile. We have the City Open, which will be an area
mm-hmm.
Where, of course, there will be food and drink showcased. And then we have Events DC, who is our event sponsor for that night. But we have an experience where you walk into the ballroom and you are weaving in and out of all that we think this industry represents and the food and beverage that is showcased.
All right. Unfortunately, we have to move on.
Yes,
but tell
do.
Us very quickly how people can get tickets.
They can go to our website, ramw.org, purchase tickets fast. I think Tuesday or Wednesday is the last day that
and
everyone can purchase.
Are quanto?
And they are $225.
A bargain.
Okay. Yeah,
that's a
go.
Great party. All right, Kathy, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks so much,
2,000 people already?
1,890.
Of my best friends. All right. Tony Luca, step up to the plate. So Tony Luca is the managing partner of 1905, and... 1905 is a great little, it's a, what did you call it?
A gem? It's a little gem.
Oh, it's
I
a
love
little
it.
Gem. Hmm. But you've got a new place opening soon, El Camino, so we want to hear all about that. Let's start with 1905. Why don't you give us the 411 on that?
Sure. 1905 is located at 1905 9th Street over
is
Northwest
Is that just a coincidence
DC?
That you...
Total coincidence.
Wow.
People ask if we're going to do another one, which means we now have to search around the city for addresses that have 1905 in them. And no, just kidding. But yeah, we've been at 1905 9th Street for 5 years now. And yeah, we are kind of the quintessential cozy little romantic neighborhood bistro. That's who we've been from day one.
Mm-hmm.
When we opened up over on 9th Street, we were basically the only non-Ethiopian restaurant on the block.
Right.
So we've been a destination for basically the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
People who are coming to 1905 have to know they're going there ahead of time. We're a little bit hard to find.
You are a little hard to find.
Yeah, it's kind of one of our charms, but also an Achilles heel. People don't walk by the building and know we're there. There's a wine shop on the first floor. So we're a little bit hidden.
Mm-hmm.
But what we've heard kind of from day one is that people love to discover us. They come up the entryway stairs, turn the corner, and they see this beautifully appointed dining room and say, God, I can't believe I haven't heard of this place before. And they like to tell 2 to 3 of their best friends.
Everybody's hearing about it now.
We're starting to get our name
Hello,
out there.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. Obama.
Yes, that would be nice. A date night would be perfect for the Obamas.
So tell us about the cuisine and what you guys are doing there at the restaurant.
Yeah, sure. Our chef's name is Joel Hatton. He's been cooking in D.C. kitchens for 15 or 20 years. He's originally from North Carolina. So the menu in 1905, the real thrust of it has always been to be accessible. From my standpoint, I wanted to make sure that neighborhood folks could come in multiple times a week if they wanted. So from a price point and also from a cuisine type, we always wanted to do relatively simple foods, but just execute it at a really high level.
Mm-hmm.
And consistency was always the most important factor as well. So people would know when they came in that they were going to get a certain quality. So what Joel's done is he's taken what was always kind of elegant American food and added a pretty strong Southern flair to it,
mm-hmm.
Which actually really fits with the type of food we've always kind of envisioned, which is a little bit more comfort foody.
Mm-hmm.
Again, just kind of...
Last time I was there, I had that cauliflower steak.
Yeah, which is...
It was delicious. It was so yummy. I mean, I'm not vegetarian, but I love that dish. It's a really unique, and it was a really satisfying meal.
Yeah, how come I wasn't
meal.
There with you?
Because you don't get invited to anything.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Tony.
Yeah, well, next time.
But
he really kind of... He always... you know, his specialty really is the treatment of meats. He loves to cure, smoke, do whatever he can to meats. Mm-hmm. What's interesting, though, is that he spends just as much, if not more, time focused on the vegetarian dishes. We have a very small menu, so we need, in order for it to appeal to a large base, we need to have dishes on there that kind of cover all the bases. And he's one of those chefs that doesn't want to mail it in on anything. Because it's a small menu, everything has to be good because it's going to get ordered frequently. Mm-hmm. And so for the vegetarian dishes, he puts that extra effort into it, and it really it resonates with the diners, whether they're vegetarian or not. And it's good to hear that, you know, non-vegetarians are enjoying those dishes, too.
Absolutely. Now, are you still doing the breakfast for dinner on Tuesday night?
Yeah, so Sunday brunch.
I love that.
Yeah, it was one of those things where, you know, Sunday brunch was really taken off. Mm-hmm. As you have in front of you, it's a confit deep-fried leg and thigh chicken.
We're digging the waffles.
With waffles, yeah. They might be a little cold right now. But
it's okay.
Brunch really took off on Sundays, and is actually, we were working, me, Joel, and our wonderful PR lady, Mel, who's here in studio.
Not that wonderful.
Malcolm. Yeah.
So, she Mel, should I take a big bite now?
Yes.
You ready?
Okay, go ahead. Ooh. That's a lot of noise on the mic.
Good.
All right, we like to hear that. So we were kind of brainstorming on what we should be doing earlier in the week to get folks in, and mm-hmm. it was this... I think it was actually, we talked about just doing a chicken waffle night on Tuesdays, but then Mel said, why don't we just do all the brunch? And, you know, it's the early part of the week is depressing enough for people, so why not give them an excuse to relive their weekends? So we do our full bottomless Bloody Marys and mimosas as well on Tuesday nights, and
that's,
you'd be surprised.
So much fun.
Yeah, it ends up being a really energetic
night. It's
funny
that she said that, because I was threatening to commit suicide on Mondays because I hate it so much. So,
but yeah, still here.
If you make it through your Monday, you can come to Tuesday brunch. Mm-hmm.
This is delicious.
Yeah, it's
even
yummy.
Cold.
It's
yum.
Really yummy. So let's talk about your roof deck, because that's open now?
Yeah, so the roof deck, that was when we opened in 2008, we just had the main dining room and main bar area. And really the thought process was we needed a catalyst. 9th Street, like I said, had not really, you know, fallen on people's radars at that point back in 2008, 2009. So we felt that outdoor seating would be that catalyst to, you know, drive more customers, to put us on the map, mm-hmm. Create some buzz. But we didn't know going into it that it was going to be basically a 3-year process working with the city to get the roof deck open. But it finally opened in May of 2012.
This is where you can use Kathy Hollinger again with
right?
We need
out.
That kind of help.
She just ran out the front door.
Right.
So the deck opened in May of 2012, and it immediately had a massive impact on the business. Obviously, it drove new customers here. We had a whole new revenue center, but... it really got the food media talking about us in a different light, which, you know, in this day and age, like you've talked about, with hundreds of new restaurants opening a year, it's hard to compete when you're 5 years old. And it's hard. You have to create excuses for the food media to talk about you. And the roof deck was a great means to do that. And it just it brought in what was nice is that I was worried that it was going to, you know, drastically change our demographic mix, which was always really nice and wide. Mm-hmm. But what it did is, rather than replace any of those cohorts, it actually just expanded them. We started seeing different groups that hadn't been venturing over to 9th Street coming over to 9th Street.
Hmm.
And it really, and everyone that goes to the roof deck has to walk through our dining room. So every time they walk through, they get to see our dining room, which is a pretty, you know, beautiful and quaint spot. So I was also worried it was going to be a vacuum and draw all the business out of the dining room and just up to the roof deck. But what it's done is it's driven additional business downstairs. People go up to the roof, have a drink, they come downstairs and have dinner.
All right, we got about 1 minute.
Well, we have to hear about El Camino.
Talk about El Camino.
Yeah, so my business partner and I, Phil, have been really focused on Bloomingdale for a while. He's lived over there for 10 years. The first spots I looked at before 1905 were in Bloomingdale, actually. So we've always had our eye on Bloomingdale.
Mm-hmm.
And this was actually his brainchild. He found the location. It's in the same building as Boundary Stone. It's the old Sylvan Theater, so it's an old historic building.
Okay.
He found the spot, and he'd envisioned always doing a Mexican restaurant, but more of an authentic Mexican, not Tex-Mex. And when this space became available, we kind of dove in head first, and it took about 6 months of lease negotiations, finally signed the lease last August, and we've been pushing hard through on construction. So we're hoping to open later this summer, early fall. But we really want to be authentic Mexican food. We took a trip to Mexico City and doing all the due diligence. We want to make sure that that type of cuisine is represented well in
cool.
D.C.
All right. Great. You're entrepreneurs.
That's very cool. Well, thank
best
you
thing
so
for
much.
Washington. All right. So... go down to 1905 at 1905 9th Street and enjoy.
All righty.
Thanks, Tony.
Thank you so much.
So now we're going to... Chef Willow Bennett is in town, and he's on a rock and roll schedule. He's the chef owner of the award-winning Picayo restaurant in the Condado Plaza Hilton in San Juan, but he's here today to cook up a Father's Day brunch at Mio over on Vermont Avenue, and so he's going to be talking and running, right?
That's right.
So we had a chance to talk before the show. You had a pretty interesting kind of, it sounds very much like Cajal's experience. You didn't exactly grow up wanting to be a chef. How did all that happen?
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, great SAT scores, but no applications to any college, which worried my father tremendously. And, you know, then he said, well, pick out something, a subject from the Florida Institute of Technology book. And I chose photography, so I did that for about a year and then quickly dropped out of that. However, kept the interest in photography, and I still do photography professionally. Dropping out of that, tried applying for the Army computer science, and they said, well, you know what? It would be great, but you are actually colorblind, so we cannot give you the computer technician position. However, assistant to the chaplain would go well with your psychological profile. I said, well, I'm glad you think so, but it's not, no thank you, at 18 years old, you know?
What else you got?
Right, exactly. Right. So, you know, I started washing dishes, and the manual aspects of it, you know, peeling shrimp, washing lettuces, whatever, that really gave way to it. 32 years ago, I called my father. I said, you know, I think I'm interested in this culinary thing, which was cool that he played along.
Finally, you're interested in something.
Right. So, in essence, went back to Puerto Rico and did a non-paid apprenticeship at the Hilton. For a full year, non-paid, you know, working 12, 14 hours, much a very European-style apprenticeship, and then went to Culinary Institute in New York.
And
then where'd you go?
Right. Then after that, I worked at Le Bernardin for a while, worked at the Water Club.
That's a good place to start.
Absolutely. You know, actually, first year of operation of Le Bernardin. You know, after that,
Eric in studio before.
He was telling me, actually. Yeah. So I'm good friends with Eric. So after that, I got my first appointment as an executive chef at 24 Fifth Avenue in the corner of 9th Street and Fifth Avenue. After that, I moved to Chicago, was a chef there, then went to Puerto Rico, was the executive chef to the governor for a couple years. And in 1990, my wife and I opened up Picayo, which is now 24 years old.
So we're going to take a break, but when we come back, all the literature on you says that you combine traditional Puerto Rican ingredients with Japanese, Chinese, Thai, Spanish, Italian, and classical French influences. And I want to know.
Sure.
It's like the United Nations of food. When we get back, let's hear about that.
Cool. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
In today's competitive job market, imagine not having the reading skills needed to even fill out an application. 90,000 adults in D.C. are considered functionally illiterate. It takes a lot for an adult to admit they can't read. It takes even more courage to do something about it. The Washington Literacy Center teaches adult learners to read, giving them options and a bright future. Please give back to the community by donating today. Go to WashingtonLiteracyCenter.org and make your much-needed charitable contribution. Changing lives through literacy. WashingtonLiteracyCenter.org.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide. But only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
Do you want to do more to help people in our community? United Way of the National Capital Area is gearing up for Do More 24, a one-day online fundraiser. On June 19th, you'll have 24 hours, starting at midnight, to give where you live and donate to the causes you care about. So on June 19th, go to domore24.org and donate to the nonprofits that serve the region. Get more info at domore24.org.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Hey, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We're talking to Chef Wilo Bennett about a fabulous restaurant in Puerto Rico that combines a global a polyglot of influences. Right. So how does that happen?
Well, I'll tell you what, I call it new global mix, you know, which is another form of fusion, if you will. And, you know, as I was saying earlier, I have a couple, you know, missions. You know, one of them is to preserve the culture. So I try to elevate dishes without unanchoring them from their origins. Only like if bistec cebollado, which is one of those traditional dishes, was made with top round. So I make mine with beef tenderloin, but I don't, you know, fuse it with anything. On the same token, you know, I'll fuse with a bunch of things. Like, for instance, you know, the octopus lollipops that I brought is like the slivers that I use for the carpaccio, which I will marinate with oregano, and then I'll use Canadian ice wine verjus and green apples, so you have that. Or, for instance, I'll do something like fresh foie gras sauté with ripe plantains and Italian black truffle honey, or then we'll go on to, you know, we'll make the gyoza dumplings filled with, you know, other elements of the culture. So it just goes all over the place.
Well, I mean, we were talking off air. I mean, you wrote a beautiful book called Puerto Rico, True Flavors, and you talk about the history of the cuisine.
Sure.
You know, totally different than what we were talking about earlier with My Irish Table, how there was no real tradition, and now it's totally new. But you talk about the traditions of Puerto Rican cooking and the culture. Sure. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Many traditions, you know, as you know, the evolution of a culture, you know, it's done by lots of elements. So in our case, you know, lots of elements from Spain, so the rice and, you know, the saffron and the chorizo sausages and all that stuff, you know, it's all there, plus everything that was, you know, particular to our own island. When it comes to other things, you know, as the American troops came over, they were carrying a lot of, you know, canned corned beef and Spam and all these things. And I realize, you know, not a lot of people want to know about those things, but those are some of the true things in the culture. You know, whether you're a banker or a garbage collector, you know, you're all coincide that this canned corned beef stew is like a great thing. So it goes beyond financial boundaries, you know.
You're like the dream chef of college students, you know that, don't you? So let's talk about what you're going to be doing at Mio, because when people come in there, they're going to get some of this.
Absolutely. So on the menu today, we're going to have things like, we have a beautiful Hawaiian swordfish marinated in sofrito, and then we have a compote of onions, cooked in red wine and honey.
For people who don't know what sofrito is, because you say it's such a mainstay in Puerto Rico.
Absolutely. Sofrito is one of those elements that goes in just about every dish that is a stew-like recipe or a soup, which is a puree of cilantro, onions, garlic, and a little bit of onions. So that green puree constitutes part of the start of a lot of recipes. Mm-hmm. So it's marinated in that sofrito, very herbal. Lots of cilantro flavors would be what characterize that. And then we actually put plenty of it, so when you put it and sear it on the pan, you know, it blackens a little bit on the edges, so that little blackened sofrito element is part of it. And then we serve that with an emulsion of yuzu and white truffle. So it has a little corn mash and some green beans, but we're doing things like scallop raviolis with a bacon, again, sofrito jam on the bottom and traditional beurre blanc. So I'll install a lot of classical French, which was really the bulk of my training. Mm-hmm. And then I mix and match. Like, for instance, a traditional dish on the book that is called Pio Nono, which is made with ripe plantain. So I took the Charlotte technique and used that to shape a better or a more uniform dish, you know, a better looking dish than tradition, without unanchoring or adding or fusing anything. So, you know, there's a bunch of things going all over the place. But in essence, Puerto Rico will be a great deal about, you know, rice and beans is a huge element. We're more about the meat than about the fish, despite the fact that we're surrounded by water. Okay. Certainly corned beef stew is one of the things we're going to be serving at the restaurant as well.
I want to jump in because if you haven't made Father's Day plans yet, you really should get over to Mio and get some of this guy's food.
Well,
you've seen him before because you've seen him on Top Chef. I just, you know, I want to make sure the name rings a bell. And you have a show called Sabores de Ensueño con Willow Bennett on the Utilísima channel, right?
And that's in Utilísima, Argentina. But I also have my own show that airs in Puerto Rico and all of Central and South America, Spanish-speaking Central and South America, which is called Sabor a Willow, going on third season right now.
Maybe you can tell us how to get our show on the air.
Tell us why you're here today, though. I mean, how'd you hook up?
Sure. I hook up with my dear friend Manuel, owner of Mio Restaurant, and, you know, collaborating as a guest chef here. here, you know, just promoting the flavors of Puerto Rico and, you know, the essence of Puerto Rican cooking.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we want to thank you so much for coming in. Your book is
my
really
absolute pleasure.
Fantastic.
Pleasure.
Thank you so
Come
much.
Back.
You bet.
All right. So, Rob and Carrie, we're going to wrap up with you guys.
What are you pouring next first? Let's hear.
Excuse me. Sure. So next we have our Not Your Daddy's Manhattan, which is
Daddy's
our
Manhattan.
Take on a traditional Manhattan. Mm-hmm. Served with a little bit of Fernet Branca, Carpano Antica, which is a port wine, bitters, and bullet bourbon.
Okay.
So it goes great. Actually, you know, June is National Steakhouse Month.
I did not know that it's National Steakhouse Month. Okay.
So how come there's only a Father's Day, but there's a National Steakhouse Month? Is that?
It doesn't seem fair. It doesn't.
Back asswards are what?
It works out for us.
Just,
it works
out
just
fine my
for
butt
us.
It is.
So we are featuring a 50-day dry-aged bone-in 20-ounce New York strip with our house-made chili rub on it. So this cocktail goes great with it. For those bourbon drinkers out there, very approachable.
Whoa.
I'm a bourbon drinker.
A little bit, not as sweet as the last one, but yeah.
I prefer this.
When did you become a bourbon drinker?
It's not sweet. That's why I like it. It's really yummy.
Yum.
So tell us about the cocktail program, because you have all these funky named drinks. What's behind it? And, you know, some of them are sweet and some of them are not. Talk about how you guys put that together.
Sure, yeah. We're just looking, you know, for a little bit of balance, something for everybody. You know, people come and ask us, like, is it strawberry, cobbler, girly? Well, it's pink, so you decide.
Right.
But,
well, it's sweet.
It's good.
Not a dry drink
no, absolutely.
At all.
You know, in terms of beverage, we have our cocktails, 8 of them that are in every SDK across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of them are venue specific. Like here in D.C., we have a cocktail called the District Darling, which is made with apple pie moonshine, a little bit of Aperol, some thyme infused honey.
Mm-hmm.
So we are getting a little nod to Capitol Hill there. But we also have a great wine program as well. Wine list that consists of about 225 wines, price ranges, you know, from as low as 35, you know, to your upper echelon wines as well.
How cranked do you get sitting around while you're inventing apple pie moonshine drinks?
Well, it's like when we were opening or training the bartenders.
Wait, can I just
say? This is why, God invented Uber.
Yeah, that's the only reason. Yeah.
Around him.
No, you know, we started off in New York City where cabs are everywhere. So it makes things a little bit easier.
Thank you. So is this the drink you were just talking about?
Yeah, the one you guys have now in your hand is the District Darling that's made with apple pie moonshine.
And this is a new drink. So who's coming up with the drinks? Is Carrie coming up with the drinks? Are you all sitting around and playing?
A lot of them, our core cocktails have been around since we started 8 years ago in New York. And then the other ones are venue specific. Our corporate beverage director, Evan Polchowski, has come up with some cocktails. I've got a couple on the list as well. But, you know, we're just looking for fun things that people are interested in. You know, cucumber is very hot right now. Bourbon is, you know, exploding all over the map.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just trying to stay trendy to what's, you know, what's hot and what people are, you know, consuming.
All right.
Okay.
Well, we got a couple more seconds.
I think we have like 1 more minute. Yeah. They can have a minute, can't
one
they?
You can have a minute.
Like,
okay, that's it.
No. So we have been open now just over a month. We started lunch last week.
I was just going to ask.
So lunch is now being served from 11:30 to 3. Look out for happy hour within the next couple of weeks starting.
What about brunch? Are you going to go that route? Is that a yes, is that a fingers crossed yes or a fingers crossed no?
Fingers crossed yes. No,
okay.
There are talks about it. Nothing set in stone just yet. But, you know, happy hour, as I said, will be kicking off, and we are open for lunch.
What do you have on the lunch menu? What's an example?
Everything. You know, we have our...
is it a separate menu?
It is completely separate, but we do offer all of our steaks for lunch, but we've got some, you know, great salads, great sandwiches at a pretty great price point for the area.
Mm-hmm.
So everything, as I said, you know, very approachable. It's not as hyped up as it is at dinner time. It's a little bit more calm, cool, and collected.
So no salsa dancing at the...
Well, it depends on if I'm working or not.
If I'm in the mood, I'm going to do it. I want you to...
I'm going to let you.
All right. Okay. Unfortunately, that's the show. We got to wrap up. If you're out there and you heard stuff that you're interested in, you can find everything about today's show and a lot more on Nikki's website, thelistareyouonit.com. You want to know what's coming up this week that's fun to do, listen to her on WTOP. That's 103.5 FM at about 12:50 today.
Mm-hmm.
And also at 11:50 on Thursdays.
Did I do that?
I finally did that right.
No, actually, that's not correct, but whatever.
What the hell? Who cares? we're winging it here.
Yeah.
And follow her on Twitter, because that's a place to find out what's going on.
Absolutely. Okay, so we will not be in studio next week. We will be playing a best of. But the following week, we have a full studio once again. Michael Schlau, the famed chef from Boston, has just opened his new restaurant here in D.C. called Tico. He's coming in, and they have an amazing cocktail program. So Steve Ehr is joining him, and the two of them are going to be shaking up some